I know. You've got the look in the eye. I'll tell you that. Really, you can divide mankind up into three distinct classes: the dreamers, the realists, and the cynics. And the realists are continually being confused for the dreamers. On the other hand, the dreamers are constantly being confused with the cynics. The cynics are continually being confused with the realists. But never the twain shall cross. Never the twain shall cross this great bridge overlooking the roaring Johnstown flood. I've always been a Twain fan. I mean, you know, with the whistles. You know, on the subject of great moments of realism, I think one of the really great stories of our time is this enormous bafferuni that happened in Germany today, with the Chinese getting up there hollering about Khrushchev, and then the translators cut them off, and all they could do was talk in Chinese, and nobody could understand. And they're blasting them in Cantonese, I presume it was. This is a proletariat, no doubt. So they're blasting away in Cantonese, and everybody's sitting there who can talk nothing but Russian, Yugoslavian, and various Serb language. Right out of a Laurel and Hardy pick, I'll tell you. Reality is far greater, and all the while you have to have this quick cut to Khrushchev walking through a transistor radio plant that's picking up rock and roll. That's what he was, you know, at the same time, picking up rock and roll from the Armed Forces Radio Service in Berlin. And all the while, of course, I don't know where it all will end in the end. And yet, is Khrushchev a realist, or is he a cynic, or is he a dreamer? Dreamer. Well, now, other people say cynic. You see what I mean? It keeps getting confused all the time. You never know which way the old grasshopper's going to go. On the other hand, you see, you have the problem with the Chinese. And I remember one time when I was a kid, I was playing in this band. There were about six guys who were called in to play in the band, who were in this little band that was going to entertain for the PTA. It reminded me exactly of what happened today in Berlin. I guess it was Eastern Berlin, wasn't it? Well, I was I was sitting in the back on the stage there with my tuba on my shoulder when some lady got up in the crowd and, in unmistakable lady terms, announced that she thought the PTA, the whole PTA was a... Well, it was... The whole PTA was a... I don't know how to say this without any of you getting offended, but what she said about the PTA was a terrible thing, awful thing. A little kid shouldn't hear this kind of thing. She was discussing, cheese comes in crocks. And what she was talking about, well, it was terrible anyway. And she popped her gimmick. And she said what she thought especially was ridiculous about it was the penny supper. She said the penny supper is just a thing because a lot of you ladies like to have your egos tickled. You like to have everybody exclaim over how wonderful your cakes are. And it never does anything. We always lose money on the penny supper. And it's right. With that, the chairman started to bang on the rostrum. Pow, pow, pow. Because she had touched the truth. The PTA had not made a dime in 27 years in its penny suppers. And it was just a way for a lot of ladies to show their pineapple upside-down cakes to the world. And with that, with the truth coming up, we had to immediately swing into Bonnie Lies Over the Ocean. And we played for a while, and all the ladies calmed down, and the translators turned up their transistor hearing aids, and everything went back to normal. But nobody wants to really hear the truth, especially the wildest dreamers of all. And obviously, the Chinese laid it on the line. And then on the other hand, the Russians were about to lay it on the line. Oh, boy, who knows which way it goes. You know, speaking of laying it on the line, once in a while you see it in a cartoon. It's Friday night, and I want all of you to be calm. A lot of terrible things happen on Friday night. It's just really awful. And a lot of lives are changed irrevocably on Friday nights. And you know, just be calm and sit there and drive your car and shift the gears and look out of the window there and... drive right straight up that turnpike. Don't turn off into the weeds. Unless you're very sure. We'll be here. It's all right. Just be calm here. And you can always pretend, shut up and listen to me. You know, you can always pretend, shh, listen to the radio and let it go. You know, speaking of moments of ineffable truth, there was a cartoon that I saw in an old magazine. It sticks with me. I cannot get it out of my skull. It was, hey, you cut it out, though. It's just a, there's a cartoon that I cannot get out. It's Friday night, you know, the boys play. A cartoon that sticks right in my skull that I can't get out of it. It's the interior of an office. And in the office, it's a very big, famous, obviously tough, important man. And you see he has a desk that must be 15 feet across. And all around on the walls behind him and all around him, you see these big pictures of movie stars. And they're all autographed to him, movie stars. You see a little window on the side of the office, and you can see palm trees out there and swimming pools and all that. And you see sitting in front of the desk a little tiny bent-over old lady. And she's holding her purse. And she's wearing a little pot on the top of her head, you know, like a hat. And the man sitting behind the desk is a big, important man. He's got a cigar. And he says, and the caption is this. He says, Ma, look, I remember all that stuff. But what have you done for me lately? Okay. What have you done for me lately, Ma? What have you? Huh? What have you done? It's like almost all the modern playwrights who figure Ma did it to him or Pa did it to him. Huh? Speaking of Ma and Pa, this is all WOR, AM and FM, New York. I don't know whether WOR is a mother figure or whether it's a father figure or whether it's a Mephistophelian figure. Which one is it? Or is it a Faustus? I suspect it's more of a Faustus than anything else. Speaking of Faustus, we have with us tonight Show Magazine and W.H. Auden. You know, W.H. Auden and his Leica. Well, I don't know. I heard one of these guys the other day. The show spot is over. Oh, yeah. I heard one of these magazine guys the other day, and he said that if he was in a rowboat, and he had, you know, the rowboat was a lifeboat, you see. And he said if he was called upon to just take only the guys who really made his magazine really go, made the most important contribution to his magazine, he said there'd be me, of course, naturally. And then there would be his art director. He said he would save his art director above everybody else, and then he would have a circulation manager. He didn't say anything about the guy that handles writing, and nothing about the guy that handles ideas, nothing about the fiction editor, the articles editor. He'd save the guy that puts in them pictures, by George, and the guy that sells them subs. And they're all the rest of it. As a matter of fact, most magazines today consist of just a lot of pictures, and even when they have articles, the articles really generally, in so many of the, quote, serious magazines, are the prose version of pictures. You know what I mean? And those are the serious magazines. The serious magazines like to reduce their pictures to words. They somehow have a feeling that they're getting away from pictures. Well, a very, very curious thing going on. And speaking of words, we have another commercial here, and it is the Paper Book Gallery. Now let's get... Hey, you know, this past week, we touched on something that... I don't know whether or not to tell you the story of the great medicine cabinet discovery. This is a story that's been kicking around inside of me for about a year and a half, and I didn't know whether to tell it or not. This is the great medicine cabinet discovery. That's the name of the story. That's what it has in my mind, that name, the great medicine cabinet discovery. Or tell you the story of the electric therapeutic magnetic machine syndrome, which was another fantastic thing. I don't know. They're very allied stories, and I don't know whether or not to discuss this. I mean, there are a lot of kids and everything listening tonight at this hour. I don't know whether I should do it or not, because... there are a lot of nervous people. It's Friday night. Well, I'll tell you roughly what it is. You know, all of us have a great belief in one way or another. A magical belief in science. There's nothing like science. It's almost a new religion to people. And in fact, to many people, it is a religion. I've heard people on the Long John show, for example, who worship science the way earlier peoples worship various other gods of one kind or another. They literally do. They look upon science as their salvation. It's the thing that's going to save them, which is really all that we think of gods are, you know. On the other hand, they also look upon science as a thing that could destroy them. We also think of gods this way, too. They also, and this is a far subtler point, look upon science as the thing which created them. Interesting problem there with the new man. I mean, really the new man. Many a man believes that he was created by IBM, where he works. Oh, sure. That's the truth. A lot of people who work, say, at General Motors feel that General Motors built them. They have a body by Fisher. And literally, they really do. It's difficult to tell when you really involve yourself with one of these true organization men whether he is aware of anything to do with the chicken and the egg problem. You know, whether the chicken, you know, or the egg came first. So it's a very interesting problem. Well, it starts when you're a kid. Magic potions have always fascinated us. And this is, I'll tell you the story of the great medicine cabinet discovery. Now, to begin with, I'm going to have to tell you, leave if you have problems with your liver. Leave if you're a nervous person. Leave if you shake. You know, you have a tendency like that. It's Friday. We're giving you the disclaimer here. And the station does not necessarily subscribe to the views which will about to be expressed by me, who does not necessarily subscribe to the views which will be expressed by me, because I'm a 20th century man, and I'm in the clutches of forces over which I have no control, being very sensitive. Okay? All right. One time, I'm this kid, see? And there was this guy named Flick. He was this kid, too. We were both in third grade together. There was another guy in third grade with me together, named Freddie Martin, not the band leader, a different Freddie Martin, much younger, like 24 decades younger. Freddie Martin was a thin, nervous kid. He has never once been discussed on this program because he was the undiscussable type. He's just one of those people who was always there. In fact, there's been a lot of fiction written about him. He was the true little man. He was a little man in third grade, and as far as I know, is probably still a little man today. However, one day, coming home from school, Flick, me, and Fred were going along the alley. Now, one thing that used to be very common when I was a kid would be empty houses. Do you remember empty houses, Ed? You never see empty houses anymore, but there were empty houses that would have a big sign in the back that would say, for rent. They actually rented houses then. Well, the three of us would come home along the alleys, and we would make all kinds of circuitous different routes, coming back once in a while, you know, big thing. Coming home from school was like an hour and a half trek. It was a genuine sort of an odyssey. You would examine your world minutely. You'd go through garbage for hours coming down the alley. You look garbage. You're looking for wheels. You would look for girls. Just, you know, people, kids, chickens, mice, all kinds of things. Well, we're walking every day home from school. We would holler at the goats. There were goats in the backyards once in a while. We'd yell at the goats. And it was an every night odyssey. Well, occasionally we would come across that big sign that says, house for rent. And the house was empty. So the kids would always, this was, I don't know whether kids still do this or not, but would always walk up to the side of an empty house and try to look in the windows. Look in the basement windows of an empty house. It's all connected, I suppose, with voyeurism. It's connected with empty spaces. Do you ever have an excitement of looking through empty houses, sneaking into empty places? You know, really, it's a very, very subtle lure that places that are locked up, that are empty, have. You look in, you see, and you try to peek around. So they have the curtains down or the shades drawn. You look in, and you can see just a faint light in there. Wow, hey, is that a cabinet over there, Flick? I don't know. Hey, look, there's something in the corner. Wow. You know, wow. Well, all the time we would do this. Well, one time we're coming home from school. We came across this empty house. Said, for rent. Peeking in there, peeking in the top door. We walk up to, you know, the back door, look in. We go down, we're looking in the basement windows, look in. We look in the front door. We go around the side, we look in there in the window that's above the coal chute, look in. Hey, look at that. Hey, there's a lamp in there. Hey, look, peeking in. We go around the side and down around the basement door. There's a window there. Hey, look. Window's open. The window's open. Flick pushes it and it goes, whee! Oh! It's open. Well, Flick sticks his head in the window all the way. Looks around. Hello? Nothing. Silence. Just the sound of Flick's voice echoing back. I am holding back. Martin, being the true everyman, is behind me. Let's go in. You know, in the empty house. For crying out loud. Look around. Nobody's looking. Flick goes, whoop. In he goes. Just come on in. There's nobody in. Come on. Great. There's a tire down here. Hey, Shep, there's a tire inner tube down here. Well, in I go. And I'm on the landing now. Well, Martin is looking in. I can see, you know, the light. He's outlined against the world out there, see? I said, come on. Come on in, Fred. Fred's just looking. Well, come on. Let's go. And Flick goes up the stairs, you know, and boom, open goes the door. He's in the kitchen. I go, hey, come on up here. Hey, there's a refrigerator here. Wow. Clunk. I hear the door open. Hey, they got some eggs here. Wowie. And then I hear, down the kitchen stairs comes an egg. Woo, plop. Flick is throwing eggs. I say, come on, cut it out, will ya? Well, Martin sees the egg go swishing past the window. He cannot resist. So he is in. Well, we both go up the stairs, and here is Flick. He's got the refrigerator open, but the electricity is turned off, as they do in old houses. Oh, boy, were those eggs gamey. Oh, boy. And so we, well, plop, plop, plop. About five eggs, you know, throwing them around. Plop, 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 plop. Well, there we are. Papers all over the floor. There's an old lampshade. You know, people, when they move out, they leave all kinds of crud. They just get out, you know. They're right. Particularly in those days, a lot of people would decamp because they owed rent. You see, that's a very different kind of decamping. A lot of people used to clear out because they owed about 17 years of rent. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, Uncle Charlie would back up the panel truck in the back and whoop, whoop, everything. Ooh, down the street they go heading for Arkansas. Well, of course, when you clear out like that, you don't clean the basement. You don't clean the house. You don't do anything. There's all kinds of crud all over the floor. All kinds of wild stuff. And so we're going through the dining room. And there it is. You know, there's old torn up. There's old shoes and tennis rackets busted. And Flick's, Flick's got a lampshade on his head. Running around. Well, we're really having a ball. And it's getting dark out. Now, remember this. It's, you know, after school. It's a winter time. It's getting dark. So we're running around. And into the John I go. Well, the first thing I do is whip open the medicine cabinet. And there it is! A fantastic display of stuff. Now, I don't know whether I should touch upon this basic human urge, since it probably will embarrass many of you. But we all have a sneaking desire, which we often admit it, look me right in the loudspeaker and deny it, which we often give in to, and that is opening other people's medicine cabinets. Well, of course, all present company excepted. There is nobody in this company that does that. We admit that. It's just a lot of other people. But nevertheless, this is and has been noted at times by me that there is a terrible urge when you go to look through there and see what's there, you know, and all those bottles. Well, I'm a kid. Now, remember, just look here. I'm in third grade. So there it is. There's about 17 shelves of all kinds of bottles with little labels on them, like Mrs. McWhortle, one every half hour, two before retiring. And then there'd be those numbers on the bottoms. And they'd be red. Red capsules, you know, the kind that look like little celluloid things? And then there would be another big, fat bottle of yellow ones. Then there would be a little short, squat bottle of green celluloid ones. And then there'd be one that was red, white, and blue. This must have been a wild house full of hypochondriacs. But I never saw such a collection of stuff in my life. Well, they look great. There is something, you see, at my house, nobody ever had that kind of capsule. For some reason or other, we never had those celluloid things. And to me, those always looked like toys that they put Mexican jumping beans in or you know, like candy. They look, you know, the little whoopee pills, green and yellow and red and stuff. Well, I says, hey, Flick, look at this. Wow. Well, Flick, he's crying out loud. Wowie. And Martin sticks his head in, you know, real timidly in the john. He looks. He says, what is that? I said, look at this, Martin. All the wild, wonderful stuff. Well, we all jump up. We're all standing on the top of the seat and everything else, looking into the medicine cabinet, and we start passing it out. You really want to hear the rest of it? Let me tell you what happens. Flick opens a bottle of green ones. He says, boy, look at these. He sniffs it. He smells like peppermint. Oomph. Down the hatch it goes. I said, how was it, Flick? He says, good. It's like peppermint. I hear little poppings down there. Oomph. Whatever it was, it hit and was beginning to do it. And he says, here, have one. He has one to me, and I go, oomph. 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 Very strange feeling. Flick takes another one. Boom. Hands one over to Martin. Martin, of course, is with us, you know. When a kid is a kid, he's got to be with the kids. Martin goes, boom. All three of us are standing in the gloom of the jar and going, boom. Boom. Whatever it was, it fizzed, apparently, down there. And boom. Very interesting feeling. Flick says, here, have another. He passes the jug around. Each of us takes another one. Well, Flick says, let's try the red ones. He takes the bottle of red ones. Oh, he says, these are great. They taste like lemon. I go, Martin goes, and we all freeze to the... Well, before that 15-minute seg was up, we had each tried three of the yellow ones. And then, to top it all off, Flick found on the upper shelf a large box of what appeared to be chocolate. He said, it's chocolate. It tastes great. Oh, come on, Flick, don't hog it all. He breaks it in half, gives me half, and gives Martin half. Down the hatch it goes. It was the only thing that tasted like anything. It was chocolate. Oh, boy. Well, we're flubbing around there in the dark, and it's getting very dark by now. And I notice, since it is getting dark, a very strange thing. Flick's eyes are lighting up. They are lighting a dull yellow. Martin's eyes are a vague purple sort of neon color. Flick looks at me and says, Shep, your eyes are lighting up. My eyes were kind of a dull red, I suspect. Oh, boy. Well, we were having a great time. That's the thing. And we were all, there was a funny feeling down inside, like a dizziness, you know? Have you ever had one or two drinks? And you know that funny little dizzy, just a strange little exhilaration quality. And I'm you know, it's just, I feel it. And first time in my life, I've ever felt this quality. I'm feeling wildly dizzy. Flick's eyes are lighting up in the dark. Martin's eyes are yellow. My eyes are obviously dull red. And we're hollering around in the John. All of a sudden, Flick says, I'm dizzy. And Martin says, I said, I'm dizzy. That's terrible. I'm dizzy, very dizzy. Flick says, he goes over and he turns on the water, and all it goes, the water's been turned, two pieces of rust, it's pitch black in this joint by now. So we drag ourselves into the dining room, into the kitchen, down the steps, and ahead of me, Martin is weaving, literally weaving. He's littler than us. So whatever it was, it didn't work. Well, he goes through the window, and he falls on the ground and lays there, making little... I climb out after him, and I say to Flick, get up, Fred. Come on, Fred, get up. And Fred is flat out, just laying there. Come on, Fred, get up, will you? And I look over, and Flick is laying up against the side of the building. And he's going, And I am feeling out of my skull. My eyeballs are popping. My ears are sweating. My teeth are fuzzy. Come on, Martin, will you get up? It's late. I got to go home for supper. And Flick is just going, Well, we grab Martin and pick him up. And the three of us go down the alley. Martin's feet are just dragging, I'm telling you, just wildly dragging. And I am, by the minute, I'm beginning to sweat more and more and more. Flick is just absolutely white as a sheet. He's shining in the dark, absolutely white. Flick was a skinny guy, and he would shine just like in the dark. He's shining out. I could just see him over there. We're dragging Martin. Well, we get him up on his back porch where he lived. Mrs. Martin! Mrs. Martin! Martin's sick! Well, she opens the door, and here's this little squirt hanging there with his tongue bulking out, you know, and his eyeballs sweating, his face white. He is so sick he can't even heave. He just goes... She says, what's the matter with him? Of course, she looks at me. I am as white as a ghost. Flick is whiter than a sheet. Martin's sick. And she says, come in, Freddie. She grabs a hold of Fred, slams the door. Oh, I got to get home. I'm running home. I got to get home. Flick splits. I don't even see Flick. Up and down the alleys, I'm going, I'm sweating. I hang out to a telephone pole. Oh! Up the back porch I go. Hey, Ma! Oh, oh. Hey, Ma! She opens the door. What's the matter? Oh, I'm sick. What do you mean you're sick? I have no idea what we ate. All I remember was that I saw the linoleum coming up at me. Big blue and yellow squares coming right up at me. Never have I since experienced such nausea. I was one enormous stomach. And whatever was in that stomach, it wanted to get out. And that stomach was not giving it up. I was an enormous, extended, bloated stomach with feet. Two ears and a pair of bugging eyes. Well, I saw that linoleum coming up. And my mother obviously saw me going down. And the first thing she thought of was that I had blown my entire life savings of over $4.20 down at the igloo. Which thing I had done on one other occasion, memorable, I might point out. She says, that igloo! That was all I heard. It seemed like 4.5 hours later, I am on the cretonne daybed, and Dr. Slicker is looking over me. Dr. Slicker said, and I remember the words clearly, it must have been something he ate. It looks like ptomaine, but I can't figure out, is everyone else okay in the family? My kid brother's looking down. His eyes were as blue as a pair of marbles. Health radiating. My mother looking down, pink and healthy. She says, I don't know. He's had the same thing we've had. Old man Slicker, all he could say was, well, I guess it's some kind of a bug. All I could say was...